Today, we've got two childhood best friends from elementary school who linked up as adults and started a matcha Amazon business that now does millions of dollars a year. How cool is that? Pretty cool, I think. Black Box by Helium 10 houses the largest database of Amazon products and keywords in the world outside of Amazon itself. We have over 2 billion products and many millions more keywords from different Amazon marketplaces, from USA to Australia to Germany and more. Use our powerful filters to search through this database for pockets of opportunity that you might want to get into with your first or next product to sell on Amazon. For more information, go to h10.me/blackbox. Don't forget, you can save 10% off for life on Helium 10 by using our special code SSP10. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Serious Sellers Podcast by Helium 10. I'm your host, Bradley Sutton, and this is the show that's completely BS-free, unscripted and unrehearsed, organic conversation about serious strategies for serious sellers of any level in the e-commerce world. And we are going to the opposite side of the world today to, I believe, they're in Singapore. And it's funny because the way they were introduced to me by Crystal and somebody else from Amazon, she was like, oh yeah, I want you to meet the Matcha Bros. But I don't think that's their official name. So I'll let you guys go ahead and introduce yourselves to our audience. This is the first time you'll be on the show.
Sure. So my name is Sam, and this is my business partner, Sing Chuen. We're not actually brothers, but we work together quite closely on a business that we started together. Our business is called Naoki Matcha. And as the name suggests, we sell matcha green tea powder in the United States, in the United Kingdom, and in Singapore.
You know what? I've known you of you or about you. I literally thought you guys were brothers this entire time, not just because of that name. And so I've already learned something new. I literally thought you guys were
brothers. Yeah, no. We get that a lot. Yeah.
Brothers from other mothers.
Yes, we can go with that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Hold on. Now let's, I already learned something new. So let's just take it way back. Both of you born and raised in Singapore?
Yep.
How did you guys meet? Did you meet like some story like you met in university or how did you guys meet each other?
Sam and I met. Oh, this is Sing Chuen, by the way. So I'm the business partner. Sam and I met in primary school. So we have known each other for quite a long time. So
now that is a good story. All right. And then you went to the same one or you just met in the neighborhood or what?
We went to the same one and we actually were in the same school for like 10 years. And then our paths kind of diverged for a little while, but we reconnected in university because we were both interested in like business and entrepreneurship. And I think that's how it kind of like reconnected and we started exploring different things. And that's how we started working together again.
What did both of you major in university?
I studied business and Sam, he was actually a lawyer.
Yeah, I studied law at university.
Upon graduation, did both of you guys go into that field that you had studied, law and business?
I guess in the sense that because we started a business would be quite relevant. But in that in another complete sense, it wasn't really that relevant because the things that you studied in school were geared to get you a role in a company. So it wasn't very practical, but the concepts, they were useful.
Yeah. So after graduation, I did practice law for like a couple of years. And then while doing this business, and then at the end of the 2 years, I realized that I had two opportunities and like this one kind of showed itself to be a bit more, had more potential. So I left the law and I went into e-commerce.
Who discovered e-commerce first? Was it you, Sam?
Yeah, so I think I really found out about this opportunity on Amazon and FBA, the ability to like sell in another country that is not yours. I think back in like 2015, 2016, this is like early days, right? But at that point in time, I was still like a university student and so was Sing Chuen. So we really didn't have like the kind of resources that we needed to really tackle this opportunity, right? So we spent some time like learning about how to approach it. And we only really launched in like late 2016. And from then we went on our careers, we kind of like grew it slowly along the way. And then after a few years, we realized that, okay, the time is right. This is a good time to go all in.
Okay. So in 2016, you guys had reconnected and you're like, hey, let's do something together while still having day jobs at that time.
Yeah, exactly. Sam was a lawyer. I actually worked in e-commerce as well. I worked in Alibaba for quite a number of years. So it helped that I could bring a certain kind of context to how the Amazon platform worked. And so we decided to start this sort of like to see where this would be going, because it was exciting, it was an opportunity, and we always wanted to have our own business. So that was sort of like the paradigm in which we started off on.
And so at the time, in 2016, when you first just started dabbling in e-commerce, it sounds like you weren't all in. Yeah. Was it matcha that you got into? Was that your first thing, or was it other things?
So when we first started, we started, as most people do, with like a search query on Alibaba.com. The first products we actually sold were like these glass teapots. So we realized that they were not too bad to sell, actually. We reached like five figures in monthly revenue by like within a year. But we met the same problems that I think a lot of people encounter, which is that after a while, people see that you're somewhat successful, and then they'll try to launch a copycat product, right?
Yep.
And therefore, when we found that happened to us, and we found it very difficult to grow, so we really were like scratching our heads to think about like what other types of products or categories that we could do, and that's why we landed on matcha.
Okay, so when you landed on matcha, were you still working your day jobs, or by that time you were all in on Amazon already?
No, we were still working our day jobs, because for matcha category and the grocery category, we found that, like, you know, it's not so much of like a quick win kind of situation. You need to invest the time and energy, and you need to have quite a lot of patience before your results actually bear fruit. And for us, that took actually a number of years, because you need to kind of like build your credibility and gain experience in what you're selling as well.
Are we still talking 2016, or are we already now in 2017 in the timeline, or where are we at when you guys decided matcha?
Right. So in 2016, we dabbled in matcha, and then we spent the next 2 years essentially trying to improve the product and better understand the category and the product market fit as it is in the US. And we took like a couple of years to do that properly. And I think it was only about 2020, you know, right after COVID hit, when we realized that, okay, the product is good. We have a good product that can stand up against the other competitors in the space, and we're going to go all in and grow this thing.
On the side of this, because our matcha green tea is from Japan, and there was a requirement, I wouldn't say it's a hard requirement, but there is an understanding that in order to get the good product in Japan, especially from your suppliers, you kind of need to cultivate the relationship a little bit and take some time for them to trust you. And so it's not as though as we didn't want the best product right in 2016. Number one, it's not, it's a learning process, right? Especially when what the market is telling you of a certain kind of taste that they prefer. But it's also bringing back those requirements to the suppliers and the factories to let them know this is the taste that we want. And barring communication barriers, there's still that they need to feel each other out to exactly ascertain what we're looking for. And that took quite a bit more time than what you would be doing on Alibaba.
That's what has me curious. This is not something you would just like find on Alibaba. So where did the how did you guys land on matcha? Was it something you guys just liked? Was it because you were doing teacups and you just were like, it was a side thing? Like, how in the world, or did you, you know, find it in Helium 10, or how in the world did you say, you know what, I think there's opportunity in matcha. Let's go ahead and, you know, examine this further.
In Singapore, generally we are exposed to Japanese culture quite a little bit already, but more closely, I guess it's also because I like the green tea. So at a point of time, I didn't drink a lot of matcha, but I knew about it. So we explored that as a potential item to try to sell. And in that sense, it checked all the boxes as well, right? Whether it is for the economics, the logistics, the business fit, branding, pricing. And that's how we started off like taking the first step.
I think also at that point in time, this is like 2015, 2016, right? I think matcha was just beginning to get popular in the US. So yeah, that's when I think the craze started, right? So I think we were also at like the right time in the right place. And we realized that, you know, we could marry like our interest and the market opportunity in front of us. And that's how we really landed on matcha.
You know, I used to live in Japan when I was younger. And that was why, you know, like matcha is not exactly a natural thing for an American person to like, but I kind of liked it before it was cool. And now, like you said, it's just like booming. Everybody's like, hey, matcha, you know, you can go to Starbucks and get matcha this, and you can get matcha in, you know, non-Asian markets, which before it was different. So that was, you know, a little bit of foresight. Now, when you first started with the matcha, you know, you had said until then you were dabbling in other things. Were you profitable on the Amazon side, or up to that point you still hadn't made profit in the first, you know, year or so of your Amazon business?
We tended to search for products that were more profitable on the first sale. So in that sense, the first product that we went to, more like glass cups, teapots, things like that, they were already profitable. So it's not as though as we were dabbling in things that were really difficult to do, low priced or otherwise.
Your first matcha product that you launched, was that the one that was successful, or did it take a couple of tries before things really started taking off?
Well, I think it is still the first product that we launched, but what we had to do was tweak the formulation over the years several times. And each time we're trying to improve it and fine tune it to better suit like the feedback that we were getting. So it is the same product. It looks the same, but there are always slight tweaks over the years. And this kind of like helps build that, I guess, average review score that goes up, because like, you know, you're getting closer to what people like with each iteration, right?
To find that like perfect blend and everything, you kind of mentioned it, and I know this about your history. So can you talk a little bit about, like we just said, this wasn't something, oh, let me find something in Alibaba, let me just put my sticker on it. How did you look for, I don't even want to call it factories, but producers of matcha in Japan, like that's not on, like we said, it's not on Alibaba. And then talk about the long process of actually, I believe you like would fly to Japan and meet different places and try things. Talk about that long process. How long did it take, and what were the steps involved in that?
At the start, we asked for samples from willing factories. And once we tasted them and we realized that this was something that could be in the ballpark of what's considered as good tasting to the market, we would ask the supplier whether they are willing to sell us a certain volume of matcha, right? So there are several factories in Japan that do just green tea, and their idea was sort of branch out to selling matcha as well, because that was where the growing market was. And these were the factories that were more suitable for us to go into. And once we spoke to them, yeah, their experience with matcha may not be the best at that point of time, mind you, but they were willing to work with us. And over a period of time, once we let them know exactly what we're looking for, and they were willing to tweak to our preferences, that's when we got a good fit. And from then, as our volume started going up, more and more various factories started.
Until that part, though, how long was that? Are we talking a month? Are we talking multiple months?
No, that actually took quite a long time. I think about, if we are on a timeline, about 3 years at least. So around 2016 to 2019, right? There was, on the marketing side, Sam was trying to find a market fit. But on the supply side, we are just trying to make sure that factories produce what we needed, and the trust and formulation, that takes a while.
How can somebody have that kind of patience? That's very rare, not just in matcha industry, but just Amazon or business industry, to have that kind of patience to, you know, to like, hey, I'm spending 2 or 3 years to get this right. Like, is that just in your nature, or what's going on there?
To be fair, I think we were not so much in a hurry. Just to share a little bit personally, it's a little bit more of, we always wanted to get a business eventually, but the timeline wasn't so important. We weren't in a rush. Sam has mentioned just now, both of us had decent careers, so we were optimizing on that front as well, and we're happy to wait.
Like you said, you still had your day jobs, you know, for a time, so it wasn't like, you know, like you were about to go out of business. And I think that's important. You know, like people sometimes just like, all right, I'm going to quit my job before they even have like a viable business. And that's what, you know, that's not going to allow somebody to have the patience. So that's interesting. Now, at what point in this 3 years did you finally have like a product just start taking off? And was it just random? Like it was just one day that it started going viral and never looked back? Or was this something where it's like, all right, you know, over a few months you were selling 10 units a day, then 15 units, then 20? Was it a gradual thing? Or what was that moment where it's like, oh shoot, we got this right and right, this is going to take off?
Yeah, I think it was really a gradual process. But that point for us, I think when the oh shoot moment, I think was when we realized that like the monthly sales for this matcha product alone was quite significant. And this was enough to basically sustain ourselves, number one. And number two, provide a good base and recurring cash flow to kind of grow the business from there. Yeah. And this was really about like, you know, as I said, early to mid 2020 after COVID started, where we realized that, hey, this thing has snowballed into something quite significant. So it was really a gradual process.
If you can recall, either of you, what was your sales the year before in 2019 when you were still just dabbling in matcha and maybe still had some of the other products?
I would say that it was like maybe like six figures a year, low six figures a year. And then,
okay,
yeah, at that point in time, we were optimistic about close to doubling each year. So that was where we were at.
And then so at that point, obviously still working full-time jobs. And then was it 2020 when it took off and then you quit in 2020 your jobs, or you still, even though it started taking off, you still were working your full-time?
I wouldn't say it took off, right? It was just at that point in time with like the good momentum that like we know that there's something to stand on. So that was when we decided, okay, time to go all in. And then we know that the product was ready. And then we started doubling down on marketing in order to kind of know that, you know, this optimized product is available to everyone. And then that's how we kind of grew from there.
What kind of marketing? I mean, obviously Amazon PPC is part of it. Was that it or other things as well?
So we did try a bunch of things at first, but by late 2020, we realized that Amazon advertising PPC mainly is that engine that's going to give us the growth for the next few years, because we realized that like on a cost per acquisition basis, like you just can't beat it.
You said 2019, low six figures. What about 2020, that your first really good year? What did you end approximately with?
I think we were just under seven.
And then how about 2021?
Yes, somewhere it's seven.
All right. So now it's like you guys knew you had something. It wasn't just a fluke. Yeah. You know, you had some consistency there. Was this variation family here of the Superior Ceremonial blend, it says here, was this like your first product that you got into?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Now I'm looking now. It's like, you know, according to Amazon, according to Helium 10, you are selling throughout this variation family here, thousands of units, multiple six figures per month, just with this variation family. So this is the one that is your big seller. So, I mean, if I'm looking at these numbers correctly, unless this is just a very nice month here, you're like what, in the, you know, mid seven figures now or higher?
I think that's fair to say. Yeah.
Okay. And explain this product. You know, there's a lot, I like matcha. I understand it. But yeah, there's a lot of people who might like think like, what, like, do you just like dump this in tea or do you actually use it to cook something? Like what, like how in the world are you selling almost 10,000 units of this a month? Like what are the people buying this to use for?
Right. I think the way to look at this product is that it's a form of tea. And in Japan, it's enjoyed as a form of tea. Now, in America, it's usually enjoyed in a form of a latte. So imagine you have a tea, and then I think in some parts of the US, like milk tea is popular, right? So in the same way, you can add milk to matcha, and then you get a matcha latte. So because people find that coffee is not working for them for various reasons, whether like they feel like, you know, nervous or anxiety after that, they try to find something else, right? So matcha kind of ticks all the boxes because it's got a little bit of caffeine, so you don't feel that like that anxiety that you get with coffee sometimes. And also there are like amino acids inside that help you stay alert for a longer time. So that was kind of like the health food appeal of matcha. But that's, I think, why it got popular. And that's why people drink it. So we also wanted to kind of share a bit of that Japanese heritage of matcha in our product, which is why it looks the way it does. Because in Japan, actually, the traditional way of preparing it is to take like a teaspoon of the powder add some water, and then whisk it up with this bamboo whisk until it becomes like nice and frothy.
I see that here in your A plus, your premium A plus content.
Exactly.
I can see a little bit of that here. You're telling that story. Really great branding here.
Yeah.
I really like that.
So they whip it up into like this frothy little mixture. And I guess if you could kind of relate it back to coffee culture, I would say like it's like a matcha Americano. That's the way that they would drink it. And that's the main way it's consumed in Japan.
Okay. Now, you've got just a beautiful listing here. You know, it looks like premium A plus content. You're educating people here. You have a frequently asked questions. And then obviously you've got some great pictures here where you've got infographics. You've got a history lesson of matcha. You have pictures of it. I mean, what else? Like you even show the origin. I think I saw somewhere there's like different cities where this comes from. Where is that? Here it is here. Like, you're like, oh, hey, this one is from Kyoto. This one's from Fukuoka. You have the city. So like, I'm assuming that, did you start this from like day one, such in-depth like information here? Or is this just gradually how you were able to kind of hone your branding?
I think we didn't know that it would take this form at the very start. We knew that, like, you know, instinctively, this is the branding angle that we want to work with. But as we grew with time, we were reacting to what's happening in the market, right? And how we need to kind of distinguish our brand and our product from other people, and to make sure that even though, like, they like the product, but they need to have, like, some visual reference to kind of, like, make that association to know that, like, oh, okay, this is Naoki Matcha, and I like Naoki Matcha.
You know what? I'm going to check something. Hold on. Let me see. I'm actually going to run Cerebro on one of your products. I'm curious, you know, you mentioned, hey, people are actually searching for Naoki Matcha. I'm just curious, like, what kind of brand recognition you have. So I'm just running Cerebro on here on our pod, on our YouTube and podcast version. We'll speed this up. Let's see here. Because I have a feeling, you know, you've been selling for a while now and you're doing so well that there are literally people who just search for your brand name. So let's take a look at how many people are searching for your brand name here. Hold on. All right. Here in Cerebro, I'm going to put phrases containing Naoki and let's apply that filter. And wow, there's 45 different keywords that have Naoki in it. And with thousands of search volume a month. So people like know your brand, you know, just Naoki Matcha by itself has 1200 search volume, and there's 45 other versions that people are actually searching for. So I mean that's kind of like what the goal is when you're selling on Amazon. Hey, sure, you want people to buy you on the generic searches like, you know, matcha tea or matcha powder or something, but you know, you've kind of made it when there's actually search volume for your brand. You guys are getting, you know, using expensive, you know, matcha directly from the source in Japan. You know, I'm sure there maybe are some competitors going like a cheaper route, or maybe, you know, like I'm just looking here in the search for matcha tea, and I even see, you know, listings that are like $9, you know, $9.95, and you guys are at like $40, $39. I see some that are, well, that's a different product, but like $7, you know, $15. How can you guys stay at around the top? Like, I'm looking at the BSR, you're like one of the top three in the whole matcha category. Like, some people think, oh, I have to, you know, like if cheaper sources come on, I'm just going to have to try and price match and then, you know, race to the bottom. And I like to tell people, no. There's ways to still succeed even at a higher price point. What's your guys' secret where you can stay at this $40 price point and still make a lot of sales despite these cheaper alternatives coming into the market?
Well, I think it's all about getting people to try it once. And once the person tries it once, right, and then they compare it to like the cheaper one that they bought before, they realize, like, you know, the difference is like night and day, right? So what we want to do is to make sure that they realize that they're getting like a good price for this level of quality. And once that kind of barrier is unlocked, and then they realize that, hey, actually, if I pay $25 for 1 ounce, right, I'm getting a lot more value if I'm paying $40 for like 3.5 ounces. So the $40 one actually becomes like a good idea, even though like it's like four times whatever is available on, you know, the results when you search for matcha.
just to add on to that, the cheaper matcha products are by nature of how it's grown and how it's produced, it tastes incredibly different from how matcha products of a certain price level are like, because of how much more expensive it is to produce. So matcha is actually in quite a bit of a supply crunch. And so there is actually not that much matcha supply to go around at the higher quality price range. In that sense, because it's so expensive, it's not possible to match the quality level if you were to go below that price. So the market kind of like segmented itself in a way. So we, as Sam has just mentioned just now, as long as we are sort of value for the price that we are offering, it's good enough for us, and that's how we managed to stay above the competition, right? If you notice that there are other competitors that are also doing well with high BSR, and they are similarly high priced, but once you do the math, you realize that in addition to our better tasting product, our price per gram, if you want to put it that way, it's still much better than our competitors.
Yeah, it's pretty competitive still.
What's the future hold? Now, you actually have Naoki Matcha in the brand name. So like, if you just stay with this brand, you're kind of, I don't want to say limited, but it's not like you can, you know, start selling, you know, something completely off the wall under this brand. Like, do you have, are there still enough new kinds of variations and blends that you can come up with to keep this brand going? Or have you considered, like, maybe we should start something completely different, start a new brand? Or what's your goal for growing the business?
Right. I think for this brand, there's still some room for growth, because actually so far we haven't touched the whole products that deal with like matcha accessories. We're just starting that this year. And also there are different grades of matcha, right? So honestly, we are really at like that middle to high kind of grade, but we haven't really touched the other grades so far. So those are kind of like the growth opportunities that are available to us. Yeah. But okay. Of course, once we hit, you know, there's a ceiling for our category, and once we hit that, then yeah, I think that you do have to choose another brand.
Obviously, Amazon USA is your main market. Are you selling on other Amazon marketplaces? If so, which? And then also other marketplaces at all, like Walmart, you know, Shopify, or other websites?
We are in the UK. We're selling the exact same brand in the UK as well. It's sort of like an offshoot. We started it because some fans who have tasted it in America have gone back to the UK, and so they're wondering, why aren't you in the UK? So we decided to launch it over there as well, and so far the growth is okay, but not as high as in America, obviously. And in Singapore, we are in on e-commerce platforms as well, and I'm not too sure we can confidently say this, but we are in the top few brands on those platforms, selling decently well too.
You know, talk about some specific strategies that you guys think have helped you get to where you are. Because it's not just like, I mean, somebody could spend 10 years and develop like the most perfect, pure form of matcha known to mankind in history. And it's meaningless. It, you know, without the strategy that is going to get it in front of people. So what are some of the things that set you apart from maybe the 10 other matcha people who maybe have started and gone out of business, you know, because they didn't have your strategies? What do you think set you apart from others?
Well, I think a handful of things. The first one is, okay, so I think you can rely on Amazon PPC. You can look at your search term impression share reports. You can look at your keyword ranking and all that kind of stuff. And that will help you in the short run. But honestly, the thing that really helped us the most was patience and making sure that your product is on a sensory level, it's actually good and people like it. Once you have those two things covered, then, you know, you just need to get people to try it, get them to tell their friends, and then like people, their friends who are interested in matcha will buy, and then they are buying again. And then this whole thing kind of like grows by itself. Your PPC and all of these other like tools that you have are really just like fuel that you add to this engine.
And on the other side of things, there's obviously you kind of need to make sure that you treat your suppliers well. Make sure that they understand what you're going through, and make sure that you try to understand what they're going through. If language is a barrier, hire an interpreter, right? It's not too difficult. Decency goes both ways. Mm-hmm. So you may be pressed, but you got to recognize that the factories themselves, they are pressed as well. So working together for a compromise, understanding each other, and not throwing too much, just to be a little bit more understanding towards each other goes a long way. I think what tends to happen is that if you're not patient, as Sam has mentioned, you may cut off communications with factories that may help you in the future, and you don't want to do that.
Now, I'm looking, speaking of PPC, I'm looking at just what I see on Amazon, and I see everything. I see sponsored product, ASIN targeting campaigns right here on this one page. I see you're targeting your own ASIN in sponsored display ad. I see sponsored brand ads. In the search for matcha tea, I saw sponsored brand video, regular sponsored products. So you guys are just like going all out with all the different kinds of PPC that Amazon provides. Any one of those, like, you think or has performed better, you know, for you, or gives you better, you know, the best ROI, or is it kind of just kind of even across the board?
Well, I think at the start, sponsored products performed very well, but you know, as you get more and more ad types and different, you know, SB, SD, SP, you mix that in, you have some DSP thrown in, the attribution for which ad actually did the sale for you gets a bit more tricky.
That's true. Yeah. Because, you know, but the good thing about that is you're top of mind because you're advertising everywhere you can, you know, like, sure, maybe you don't know exactly what got the attribution, but the point is you have such a big share of voice, you know, potentially maybe compared to your competitors, that you're top of mind for your customers. Okay. So PPC is important for what's on Amazon. I'm sure you use Amazon data points as well. What about Helium 10? What's your favorite tool in Helium 10 and how has it helped you?
I think honestly, the keyword coverage and Cerebro is still like my favorite tool. I've been using it since like 2017 when it first launched.
As you use, you search on Amazon and you search on other platforms, and you take a look at how Helium 10 sort of like compares to others, it always feels like there's a certain sense that Helium 10's information is slightly more accurate. It's more of a sense. I can't really explain it. That really goes a long way, I think, for confidence.
Now, for either of you, if there was something on your wish list for Helium 10, like something maybe we don't do right now, you're like, wow, it would be so cool if Helium 10 could do this. Here's your chance to tell me what is on the Matcha Bros top wish list for what Helium 10 can help Naoki Matcha with.
Right. So I think my number one wish list would be cohort analytics. So if, for example, I can see in January how many new customers I acquired and how much of them repeat over the next 12, 24, 36 months, that would be awesome. I don't think none of the big analytics platforms do this. There are some specialized ones that do it that we subscribe to, but they're expensive and I'm pretty sure that you guys can do a better job.
Awesome. Now, my last question is just, you know, you guys have reached this level of success selling millions of dollars. Obviously, you two are working together. How many people total does it take to run the Naoki Matcha machine? You know, like, are you guys doing 100% of the work? Do you have virtual assistants? Do you have, you know, in Singapore staff? How many people does it take to run your business?
Right now, we are actually quite a lean team. Sam, as I'm sure you can tell from this conversation as well, Sam does most of the marketing, and I do more of the supply side operations kind of activities. So in total, we have about 5 people running the entire business.
Well, this has been very enlightening. I've, you know, despite knowing about you guys, almost 95% of this, I think, was completely new information to me and obviously new to our audience. It's great to see this success story. I love matcha, so I'm going to have to purchase your product and make some, I'll be your influencer, make some matcha, some kind of matcha. Let's see. I wanted to make a matcha flan. I don't know if you guys know what that is. That's like a Mexican dish. Yeah. So that's, I'm going to make something and then it's going to go viral on TikTok and make you guys another few million dollars just for me. And then,
thank you for your support.
You could take me out to dinner.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on and let's have you guys back on the podcast in 2025 and let's see how you guys have grown at that time.